coming up on Thunder Pop.
It is the 72nd episode of the Thunder Pop podcast, and I say that like I mean it, because I do mean it. And I don't even know where I'm going, but I'll tell you where we're going. Solo preview. Solo, A Star Wars Story. This is our special preview edition of Thunder Pop. And to join me, I couldn't think of a better person to join me for Solo Talk than Mr. Johnny Lightfoot.
Hello, hello.
Joining me via Skype. And thank you, sir, for joining us virtually. Almost like a hologram, but I don't see you.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're going to roll the credits. And man, I can't wait. I'm getting excited about this, actually, this film. I'm starting to get excited about it. Would you concur? Are you? Where's your excitement level on a 1 to 10?
I mean, I would probably put me at like somewhere between a 7 and an 8, which is pretty good considering where I was like 6 months ago.
Exactly. Same here, where before I was probably at a 3 or 4. It's kind of worried. I was kind of scared and worried what was going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, didn't really want this movie, didn't really care, heard all of the things about behind the scenes. So it was just kind of like, okay, you know, I'll probably watch it, but I'm not really excited to watch it.
Right after the theme music, we're going to have a Thunder take, and it's Han Solo related for Mr. Johnny Lightfoot. We'll be right back. Number 72 with Johnny Lightfoot and myself, Stephen Presley, from the Thunder Pop Dome. Here we are. Johnny, I got a Thunder take for you to open the show.
Right on.
We want your Thunder take. Will this be the first Star Wars film, live action, and I believe you could also cover animation on that as well, to not feature a lightsaber? What's your Thunder take?
I'm going to go yes. For a while, I thought they might throw something in there, a little cameo, you know, Vader in the background or something. Sure. But now I'm thinking no.
Now, I'm thinking back, though, actually, there was a lightsaber because of the Vader cameo in Rogue One.
Yeah.
So we got one. There was definitely a lot of talk about, you know, Jedis in Rogue One and the powers of the Jedi. But then we finally get a lightsaber at the end of the film. So, and spoiler there, if you haven't seen Rogue One, you probably don't care about Star Wars at this point in time. Or you're one of those people that were not adapters to the new films, but you just like the old Star Wars. But yeah, so this probably, it's very believable that there would not be a lightsaber in this film. Because of the whole, everybody that knows the story, you know, in A New Hope, Han Solo is not a believer in the Jedi ways.
Yeah, I mean his first interaction once lightsabers come up with him in A New Hope is, you know, ancient religions, you know, whatever. So to him, it would lead me to believe up until that point where he's with Obi-Wan and Luke in A New Hope, he's just heard stories. He's never seen a lightsaber in action or anything like that.
We might even get a scene I could see somewhere, if not in this film, if the full trilogy happens, like it's being speculated, it's somewhere in that story arc. There may be come a time where maybe his mentor that's being played by Woody Harrelson, or maybe another character that actually we see on camera, on film, telling him how big of a joke the Jedis are.
Mm-hmm.
And how big of a conspiracy theory myth that it is. We might even see a scene somewhere where he's being influenced by someone else and their beliefs about the Jedis.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if that's laying it out too much for us as fans, like giving us, like spoon feeding us too much. but I could see a possibility of that, you know, because it builds into his origin a little bit more about how he becomes the Han Solo that we see in A New Hope.
Yeah, and I think we're going to get a nice arc of, you know, basically we've always, the first interaction we had with Han Solo, he's, you know, he's very cynical and downtrodden, and I want to see if this story tries to show maybe in the beginning he's a more hopeful person, and then by the end of it he's just like, yeah, you know, you can't trust anybody, nobody's really a good person, that sort of deal.
And we know who's not going to die in this film, or any Han Solo film for that matter, any Han Solo film that takes place before A New Hope. We know we're not going to lose Han Solo for one thing. And we know we're not unless they figure out some alternate universe explanation, kind of in the former fashion of Star Trek, where this is an alternate universe of Han Solo, which I don't see them going that route. That's not a very Star Wars direction to go. But if they were to, we know for sure we're not going to lose Han Solo. We're not going to lose Chewbacca. We're not going to lose Lando. We're not going to lose Jabba the Hutt, and we're not going to lose Boba Fett. Those characters are all safe. The ones that everybody else is fair game, and probably everybody else will probably die at some point. At least within not within this film, but within a possible trilogy. Would you think so? Would you think so?
Yeah, and to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if either Woody Harrelson's character Beckett or Emilia Clarke's character Kira.
Mm-hmm.
One or both of them is either going to betray him or die, is yeah. What my thoughts are. One or both, and
probably some of both coming from one or the other. And there's some foreshadowing there when Woody Harrelson's character Beckett, in the trailer, we hear him telling Han Solo, "What's the line?" It says, "Don't believe in anybody."
Well, he says. If you believe that everybody is going to betray you, you'll never be disappointed.
Exactly. And that's some foreshadowing to Empire Strikes Back when he finally reunites with his old friend Lando Calrissian.
Yeah.
And it's Lando that ends up betraying him. Of course, his hand is forced by the Empire, but it's kind of set up pretty bad there in Cloud City with the others in the story. So, yeah, so there's that. I think there's it's going to be a little bit. I think everybody else is fair game for either dying or, like you said, maybe betraying him. And that sort of builds the Han Solo character that we see in A New Hope, and that becomes a very cynical, kind of rough, more rough around the edges version of Han Solo.
Yeah, you know, doesn't trust anybody. He's in it for himself. But through everything, he always trusts Chewie. So I hope we get to build that relationship in this film and see why, out of everybody, Chewie's the one person that Han doesn't believe would ever betray him.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's going to be, I think, it seems like that'll be a big part of this film. We're going to see the story of how Han Solo became Han Solo and Chewbacca, and Chewbacca became Chewbacca and Han Solo, how they became the dynamic duo. Kind of the Lone Ranger and Tonto of sci-fi westerns.
Yeah, very much.
To a certain degree. That's a big part of the story. Of course, his meetings with Lando. And one thing I'll say for this film, I don't know if it's going to be on my scale of rating Star Wars films. I don't know where it's going to fall, obviously, until I see it. And I've read some non-spoiler reviews already and had a few little nuggets here and there I've heard. You know, the range has been pretty broad, but it seems like it falls a little bit more in kind of a mid-range, where Last Jedi was either 100% or 1%. Like, everybody was either on one extreme of the spectrum or the other, where on this film it seems to be falling kind of so far kind of in that very steady 70 to 80% range, and everybody seems to be kind of falling somewhere in there. There's a few that go higher, so we'll see. And now, I mean, the fans are going to see it now. That's the critics. That's the people that get in early, that are lucky enough to get the sneak peeks and the previews. That's the people that get paid to do that. So now we're going to see the fans and kind of what they're going to see and how they react to it. And it's going to be interesting because of the way people reacted to Last Jedi. it seems like this film's doing a lot more fan in the trailers and everything I've been seeing with Ron Howard so far. This movie's paying a lot more service to the fans, maybe, than what they did with The Last Jedi.
Yeah, I mean, and it, you have Lawrence Kasdan writing it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, while George created Han Solo, Lawrence Kasdan really made the Han Solo character, fleshed it out, made him real.
Brought him to life.
That's part of the reason Lord Miller got kicked off, was because Lawrence Kasdan wasn't happy. He mm-hmm. didn't feel like they were shooting his script. And
right.
This script, according to him, is his final script he's ever going to write. And, you know, this is the guy who wrote Empire Strikes Back. And if he goes to Lucasfilm and says, these guys aren't filming the script I wrote, this guy goes, you know, 40 years back, they're going to do what he wants. So
he's got the clout. He's got the clout at Lucasfilm more so than, I mean, he's pretty high up there at Lucasfilm as far as the clout he has.
Yeah, and he also, in a documentary years ago, was, because, like I said, George created Han Solo, but Lawrence Kasdan made Han Solo.
Yeah.
Lawrence Kasdan, along with Harrison Ford, were the two, back before Return of the Jedi came out, those were the two guys who were really pushing for Han Solo to die. Lawrence Kasdan wanted Han Solo to die. He felt like his character journey was done.
Wow. Yeah. And so, and that was, Harrison Ford loved Lawrence Kasdan's material that he wrote for his character. He loved working with his material.
Yeah. And that's why in Return of the Jedi, you can tell there are scenes where Harrison Ford is not happy. He's mm-hmm. obviously phoning it in. He's not giving it 100%, because he was on Lawrence Kasdan's side, not George Lucas's side, on how he felt like his character should have ended that trilogy.
Yeah. And of course, he notoriously did not like the Ewoks. So that was another big issue he was having while filming The Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So that was kind of another annoyance to him. He probably wanted the Wookiees. Supposedly that was
originally it was going to be the Wookiees.
As long as it's not the version of the Wookiees we saw in the Star Wars Christmas special. Like that very, if they had taken that very concept and moved it into Return of the Jedi, then you're better just sticking with the Ewoks and what they did with the Ewoks.
Yeah, no Lumpy.
Yeah, no Lumpy. One thing we will see in this film, and I didn't have this in my initial notes for this episode, but Anthony Daniels will be appearing. Now, it's now been confirmed that there will be no C-3PO in this film. This will be the first Star Wars film to not feature C-3PO in at least a cameo. There for a while, it was starting to look like he was going to be Star Wars' version of Stan Lee that was going to be at least in some capacity making some sort of cameo in every Star Wars film till the end of time. But they've kind of breaking from that trend. But Anthony Daniels is in the film playing a Wookiee.
Wow.
So apparently he plays he might be a family member or an old friend of Chewie's. And there's going to be, and there's been a still, I think, that was somehow surfaced online that shows the Anthony Daniels version of the Wookiee, but it's just the back of his head. So we just see kind of the back or maybe a angle of the side. So it's not clear, but it is clear that Chewbacca is talking to a Wookiee compadre, whether it be a family member or a friend. And that Wookiee is going to be played by Anthony Daniels. So that's going to be kind of a really interesting crossover to see Anthony Daniels playing a different Star Wars character. Apparently it's just maybe one scene, maybe a couple scenes. So it's not a huge part, from what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be fun. A couple other things about it. Canadian film critic who's with Entertainment Tonight Canada, which I think actually from what I've watched Entertainment Tonight Canada on YouTube, and I think it's actually a more entertaining version of Entertainment Tonight than the one we get here in the U.S. They have a movie critic by the name of Roz Weston. And he said there would be he did a spoiler-free review of the Solo film. A Solo Star Wars story, just like he did with Last Jedi several months ago. He said there would be he likes Solo. And this is coming from someone he initially didn't like. He actually initially liked Last Jedi, then sort of changed his review later, if I'm not mistaken. But he did like Solo, and he says he likes Solo better than Last Jedi. But what he also said was that there one of the things he did not like about this film, there were a couple of things he did not like about the film, was a random cameo. He said there was a random cameo that I thought was a little bit out of place. I've been speculating, trying to figure out who that might be. You have any ideas? I have a wild one. So I'd like to hear what you come up with, and then I'll tell you my wild one. Because we're thinking random, really out-of-place cameos is kind of the way he described it. So I have one idea.
I mean, a random one I could think of is if they did kind of like Marvel's done a couple times and just like thrown somebody like Matt Damon in there.
Oh, I got you. Kind of a celebrity playing a character.
Yeah, a celebrity character just in there playing nobody, but, you know, just their face on the screen.
Uh-huh.
That would really throw me out of it more than like a character.
Right.
Cameo. Like if, because I'm trying to think, like if you did a character cameo, like you could try to do a Rogue One person, but this movie apparently takes place almost 10 years earlier, so there's not very many characters to play with. I've heard people talk about maybe Jyn Erso, but she's only in her 20s in Rogue One, so I don't see how that would work.
She'd be a little girl.
Yeah, I mean, granted, at that time, you know, she was by that time she had been taken in by Saw Gerrera and she was being trained as like this little mercenary or whatever. Right. But you wouldn't have, you know, the adult Jyn Erso in a solo film.
What about Saw Gerrera himself?
Now I could see Saw Gerrera popping up
because he was a highlight for me in Rogue One. I was sad that he was gone when he was gone and we didn't get more of him.
Yeah, and I mean he in the, you know, in the comics and TV shows he plays, you know, a significant role in the uprise of the rebellion, and I understand that, you know, you want to try to get him in there in live action, and he had a part to play. They kind of snuffed him out pretty quick.
Yeah. Yet it's not the type of character that's ever going to get his own standalone to carry a film, but it's definitely a strong character that you just kind of want to see where you can work him in more in other live action, maybe in television too, when they launch the Disney streaming and they do Star Wars television, maybe there's some spaces for him there too. But definitely a strong character. Okay, so here's one. This is a really wild one. Obi-Wan Kenobi. Now, of course, he will not come into contact with Han Solo, but it would be a random cameo if somehow he were to turn up maybe at the end of the film, if they did some sort of kind of like Marvel does, where they do a nod or spill into the next film in the series. If they somehow did a kind of their own version of Marvel where there's an after credit scene and we see Obi-Wan, that's a setup for his film. That would be a random cameo.
That would be very random. Although from all accounts, I believe Obi-Wan movie is a go, like 99% a go. So
yeah, it seems like it, and it's moving like maybe faster and faster. After this film, I think it's probably going to follow this film's release, an official announcement from Lucasfilm. Would you agree?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if so. We have Episode 9 in December of next year. I wouldn't be surprised if so. They just announced the next Star Wars Celebration for April of next year in Chicago. I wouldn't be surprised if they go ahead sometime late this summer, early fall, sometime before Christmas time, announce, yeah, we're filming Obi-Wan right now. It's coming out, you know, either Christmas time 2020 or May 2021. But I want to say they're probably fast tracking for 2020 because they want to have a Star Wars film out in 2020.
Yeah, absolutely. The goal right now is pretty much one a year, isn't it?
For right now, one a year. And I mean, between the Rian Johnson, the Benioff and Wiseman trilogy, I would think within a 5 to 10 year stretch, it's going to be to where we're getting one you know, maybe two a year, every other year.
Yeah, I know they would like to work up to that. So basically, like 1.5 movie on average every year at that point, where you got a 2 and then a 1 and a 2 and then a 1. So it's kind of, it could really work out in their favor, because people were really upset that we got the Han Solo film. Some would say, as you would, you said that initially it was not the film you asked for, but you're getting, and now you'll accept it and maybe be very glad you got it. But it could end up being a really, just a stroke of genius, maybe accidentally, not maybe not intentionally, that they released the Solo film first. Because if Solo comes out and it's a satisfying offering, does well, and scores well with the fans, well enough at least with the fans. I don't know if you're ever going to please the fans, everybody, all the time, but at least pretty satisfying offering. Then you come out and you've been kind of on, you know, on the down low with the Obi-Wan film, which kind of builds up sort of this intrigue about it, interest about it. It's like when your favorite rock band has been in hiding for 20 years and there's now rumors that they're secretly in a recording studio working on an album for the first time in 20 years, and that, but there has not been any official announcement. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, they drop their album on iTunes. Surprise, surprise. It's a huge frenzy. Everybody's really excited, and it kind of builds interest that there's a mystery behind it. And it seems like that's kind of what's happening now with Obi-Wan, is that because it's been sort of a mystery and it's been kind of quiet, it's building up more excitement for an Obi-Wan film. And if you use your best cards last, but your first card, which was not your best card, is still a card that's going to be serviceable, then you kind of keep yourself alive a little longer, don't you think?
Definitely.
It revitalizes things at the right time.
Because, yeah, when they started talking, you know, Solo movies, no pun intended, but a lot of people gravitated to, oh, well, there's got to be an Obi-Wan movie. What happened between 3 and 4? And so in hindsight, it might be a blessing that they went ahead and did some other standalones first to kind of save it.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to, you know, put all of your chips on the table right out of the gate.
Yeah, it builds up, you know, and as they get down the road, and people are talking about Star Wars burnout, and when is it going to happen, and how soon, and how will they keep it going? You know, there's many tricks up their sleeve that they can pull out. They're at some point, they could do the Darth Vader movie. They can, but why do that right away? If that's one of your best cards, you save that card for a while. If people really want to see a Darth Vader movie, a Boba Fett film, people would love to see Darth Maul again, live action on the screen. So those are the sort of the cards that you kind of save later, don't you?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing with that. You know, I'll always say Marvel has done really well is their movies, while they are all superhero movies, they keep them changing. You know, Ant-Man's a heist film, and then, you know, you have a political thriller with Winter Soldier, and then you have your science fiction space opera with Guardians. So they just change it up, and they change up the stakes. You know, this movie's about saving, you know, one person or one family. This movie's about saving one city. This movie's about saving a whole planet. And then with Infinity War, it's about saving the universe. So they're really good about mixing it up and keeping the stakes varied. And then just, you know, giving people, while it is still in the same sandbox, you know, it's not the same toys in the sandbox, and it's not the same things at stake in the sandbox. So as long as Star Wars does that, I don't foresee a fatigue of any kind.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned Guardians of the Galaxy in there with the Marvel films. One of the things I've heard recently, speculation was that Lord and Miller, who were basically removed from Solo, the story was that their version of Solo was a little bit more like Guardians of the Galaxy, which would have featured a lot more campiness and comedy.
I can totally see that.
Yeah.
And, you know, based on, you know, things I've heard, and I've heard, Alden Ehrenreich has come out and said, like, he has no ill will towards Lord Miller, and he thought, they were doing great stuff, and you know, but then, you know, you hear the things that they weren't shooting the script. They were doing too much, which Kasdan was not happy with.
Yeah, and then of course there was all the speculation around it. What did they do to this film? Was it too comedic? Things got a little bit blown out of proportion, because if it was just the direction they were going that was a little bit more Guardians of the Galaxy, it might not have been a disaster, but it definitely might not have been what Lawrence Kasdan was hoping for when he wrote the script. And, you know, I could definitely see where they'd go that direction. Do you think there's a chance Lord Miller could have another shot somewhere along the way, not with Star Wars possibly, but with maybe something else at Disney, like a Guardians of the Galaxy type movie with Marvel?
I mean, they're too talented not to get another opportunity. I don't, and you know, from all accounts, I believe they left amicably. It was just kind of like, hey, you know, they basically told Lucasfilm, well, you gave us the keys to the car, and Lucasfilm was like, yeah, we gave you the keys to the car, but we told you you could only drive on these lanes,
yeah,
and you're driving over there. And they're like, but you gave us the keys. And they're like, well, do you want to get back in the street? And they're like, well, we kind of have these other ideas and we think they're going to be really great. And Lucasfilm was like, well, that's not what we agreed to. So, you know, if, you know, you guys don't want to play ball, then we want to ask you to leave. And they left.
When we saw Justice League, it was, to me, there were many times when you could see Justice League and you could see that film and you could say, this is definitely was a Joss Whedon thing that he put in there. And then you could see parts of the film where you're like, this was Zack Snyder's stamp on this film. And
oh, definitely.
And there were times when the things weaved together seamlessly, and there were other times where there was some choppiness where it looked like a different film from one shot to the next, and there was a little bit of, it didn't maybe cross over as well. But definitely some of the humor that was interjected in there, especially with characters like the Flash, where they made it a little bit more lighthearted. That was obviously some of the Joss Whedon stuff. So I'm wondering with this film, in Solo, with probably about 70 to 80% of it, I think, now having been reshot by Ron Howard, I'm wondering if you're going to be able to do the same thing with this film, being able to say, oh, yeah, this is Ron Howard, totally 100%, and this is Lord Miller here. This is some of their stuff.
I don't really think so, because the thing is Zack Snyder and Joss Whedon have very like definitive styles.
Mm-hmm.
When you watch either of their work, you can tell like, oh yeah, this is a Zack Snyder, you know, it's very dark, mm-hmm. it's very artistic, almost looks like a painting, very gritty. And then like with dialogue, it's very dry. And then Joss Whedon, it's usually very peppy. He tends to give like little quips and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ron Howard is such a traditional filmmaker.
Yeah.
That he shoots a script. He gets a script and he just shoots it. And then Lord Miller, I would say it wouldn't faze me if I heard that on their films that, you know, 50-60% of it was takes where it was off script. And I think a lot of times that's really fun and the actors enjoy it a lot of times. But I think in a film like a Star Wars film, it would take people out of it too much. So maybe there's a scene or two in there, but I hope not.
That's interesting stuff. There's another point that, from the Canadian film critic from Entertainment Tonight Canada, Roz Weston. He had said, and he liked the film, and he only had a couple of critiques about it. This was one of his other critiques. He said the height issue with Alden Ehrenreich and the difference of height between him and Harrison Ford, he said he wished that had been addressed by the filmmakers. He felt that like that times that kind of took him out of the film a little bit when he sees him standing next to Chewbacca and some of the other characters, and he knows how big of a height difference there is there. I mean, what do you think on that take? And he even went on to say that he says, I believe Ron Howard, if he had started this film from the beginning, would have addressed the issue. So he kind of blamed it more on Lord and Miller and their experience level.
I mean, it's tough to say before seeing it. Because usually that kind of thing doesn't really bother me.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't say I've ever watched a Tom Cruise movie, and in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, wow, this is really off. Like the height of the characters doesn't work in my mind, because, you know, we all know Tom Cruise is a little man.
Yeah.
And
is he coming in at 5'3"?
He's down there. I know he's probably 5'6" tops. Maybe, you know, maybe his height is part of what spurs him to do all the crazy things he does on those Mission Impossible movies.
Sure.
Just that little extra confidence boost to say, yeah, I'm a little guy, but I can jump off of a helicopter and grab a rope, whatever.
You know, it's funny that, yeah, he does that, and you don't think about it when he's doing those. When you see him in the film, you just, he's up there, he's action hero.
Yeah, and I mean, nothing in those films, you know, ever makes me think, well, he shouldn't be able to do that. I mean, he should be as big as Stallone or Arnold, or, well, and even Stallone's small, but he's
small
big.
Guy. He's stocky.
You know, you have your Arnolds and Dolph Lundgrens, and now you have The Rock, Dwayne Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are the guys. I mean, even Bruce Willis, I mean, he's, I believe, 6 foot at least.
Yeah, if he's 6 foot, that's pretty tall. But then you got your Jackie Chans, who come in with a totally different way about them of being a badass on film.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, in film, things like height and weight, those things kind of disappear in the movie to me.
Yeah.
Unless it's like really drastic. And I mean,
yeah, it would have to be. I mean, if Patton Oswalt was playing an action star in a movie, that might be a little bit tough. And I like Patton Oswalt. He's a funny guy. I like his work as an actor too, but I mean, he would even agree Patton Oswalt action star might be hard sell.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, to be honest, everybody standing next to Peter Mayhew, or now the new guy, his first name is Jonas. I don't even want to try to pronounce
Swedish
his last name.
The Swedish basketball player that's playing soccer.
Yeah, and he actually went to film school at Penn State, and I guess he got a call from somebody saying, yeah, we need a 7 foot tall athletic person with blue eyes. Mm-hmm. And he was like, well, I speak English. I went to film school in America. So he didn't even know what he was auditioning for. They just told him to act like an ape.
That's right. Yeah, he went in not knowing what he was getting himself into. What he was getting himself into is a really good film deal.
Well, yeah, because Force Awakens, essentially, Peter Mayhew passed him the torch, and for at least for now, he's our Chewbacca.
Yeah, he's done it for, and he's done now. He did Last Jedi, and now he's appeared in this film. He'll be in as far as everything we're led to believe, he's going to be in the next episode of the saga. There's no guarantee on that, of course. There could be some surprises, but I would bet at this point in time that there's going to be Chewbacca in episode 9.
Yeah, and I mean, if he plays his cards right, he can do like Peter Mayhew and make a lifetime career out of, you know, being Chewbacca, going to conventions, and, you know, he might never have to be in any other film ever.
Yeah, and I could see him, because he's a guy that had a lot of interest in different things. Of course, Peter Mayhew started years after Return of the Jedi. He was living in Dallas, and he started, I think it was a construction or remodeling business. So he was doing something completely away from, and then he was still doing the conventions on the weekends and going around. And then I think as he got older, he shut that business down, semi-retired from it. And then it was around that time that he went full-time with the conventions. And then there was the Star Wars saga reboot. So that came around just around that time as well, that he was retiring from his day job, which he had for many years.
Well, yeah. And the other thing is the convention scene. I remember growing up, conventions in the 90s were a lot different than they are now. I mean, they were small. A lot of them were held in like hotel ballrooms.
Yeah.
So, you know, a lot of those guest appearances, they were basically just making like $20 an autograph.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's massive, you know, convention centers and auditoriums, and they're sponsored and everything. So
it really can keep an actor that's not working, like as far as acting is concerned, it can keep them above water for many years, and yeah, even a little bit better than just above water.
Yeah, and I mean, one of my childhood heroes, Jason David Frank, who played the Green Power Ranger, that dates me, the original Green Power Ranger, still to this day, his main job, he owns a karate dojo in Houston.
Yeah.
But he basically does conventions year round, but he's somebody who owns, you know, luxury sports cars and things like that just from doing conventions.
Yeah, it just goes to show you how big of money that has become. Lou Ferrigno, who's notorious for being a frequenter at doing the convention circuit, has parlayed that, you know, what he's done with the convention circuit, he's parlayed that into many other great ventures. He does, and of course, it all started with the Hulk, and then before that, it was the competitions, the Mr. Universe competitions, that he was competing against Arnold Schwarzenegger as his, you know, his main rival in the bodybuilding competitions. But from his convention success, he's gone on, and now he's got a delivery service called Ferrigno Fit, where they send you a bag every month of different various fitness paraphernalia.
Yeah, I recall that. Yep.
And it comes with Incredible Hulk stuff too. So you get Hulk stuff occasionally with your Ferrigno Fit. And then he does gyms. He's a trainer. His daughter's in the business with him too. So yeah, there's a lot of big things that come out of that. Of course, Mark Hamill, another person that's probably stayed pretty busy with conventions for many years before he went back into doing Luke Skywalker again.
Yeah.
And not to mention the numerous amount of people that do the convention circuit who were not even famous for being actors, but they were just famous for being cosplayers.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah.
Another thing on Solo, a Star Wars film, there was an article, and it came out from, I read it on BBC, but it was published by several different publications.
Breaking news up in this place.
This one here, Lando is pansexual. The LGBT characters that are all talk. We've had Ewoks, Hutts, and Jawas, but it's taken 41 years of films to introduce a hint of an LGBT character to the Star Wars movies. The writer of Solo, who is Lawrence Kasdan's son that co-wrote the script with him, was doing this interview. He said a Star Wars story says, the writer says that a Star Wars story, the iconic character in the Star Wars story, Lando Calrissian, is pansexual in the sci-fi series. He said, just don't expect to see any LGBT romance when you head to the cinema, but people will be able to identify that Lando is pansexual. The character played by Donald Glover now, and was previously played by Billy Dee Williams in the original trilogy. There's a fluidity to Donald and Billy Dee's sexuality, said Jonathan Kasdan, who co-wrote Solo in an interview with Huffington Post. I would have loved to have gotten a more explicitly LGBT character into this movie. I think it's time, certainly, for that, and I love the fluidity. So, you know, pansexual would be someone that could love man, woman, and in the Star Wars galaxy, you could love alien, droid, anybody. And then they even went on and said that there's an area in the film where you can... he hints at his pansexuality when he calls Han Solo baby, kind of almost in a flirtatious way. What do you think about this? What's your take on this?
I mean, if it works, it works. It's the same way I feel when anybody asks me, like, how do you feel about somebody being cast as this role or somebody being cast as that role?
Yeah,
it's not, you know, what do they look like? What's their gender? It's is the person a good actor? And is the performance going to be good? And is the story good? And does it make sense within the story? If it makes sense within the story and the actor is good, then, you know, it means little to nothing to me, to, you know. I'm not going to be somebody who was like, well, when I was, when I was 8 years old and I watched Empire Strikes Back, I always imagined that Lando Calrissian was this galaxy transversing womanizer who just loved women. Like, I'm gonna get angry that now all of a sudden they're like, no, that's not who he is, because I'm not 8 years old anymore, and it's not, you know, 1992. So I'm not gonna, you know, it doesn't bother me in the least. And as long as the performance works and the story works, then the backstory is what the filmmakers want to make it. And as long as it works and it's good, then I don't care.
Yeah. And, you know, I like the idea of an LGBT character in a Star Wars or Star Trek or in a sci-fi film. And I don't think there's been a lot of that. There's been, I mean, just in recent years, that they've started in superhero films too. And I think that's going to happen. I think we're going to get that in a Marvel film, at least. And actually in Deadpool there, I believe there's going to be more of that in the Deadpool 2. And what a week we'll have Deadpool 2 this week. And then next week we get Solo, A Star Wars Story. So the stretch of films over this last 30 days is amazing. Or the next 30 days is amazing. But, you know, I think I kind of go back to, and I'm going to reserve opinion on the Lando thing until after I see the film, for the very reason of, like, you know, execution and seeing how it's done and whether it works. Maybe it's, you know, the thing is, though, I go back to when they made the last Star Trek film, they made Sulu, they allude to the fact that he was gay. And I remember George Takei, of all people, and the idea was is paying homage to George Takei and the struggles of he's gone through of growing up at a time where it was harder to be homosexual, much harder in his time. So it was paying homage to him, and then also to the diversity that Star Trek had. But it was actually George Takei that came out against it after the fact, and he said that, you know, the creator, when he created that character, he created it. He had a vision and a way he created that character, and it was not making Sulu gay. So for that reason, of all people to be against it, it was actually George Takei that was against making Mr. Sulu gay in the new Star Trek film. So he said, but by all means, I want to see an LGBT gay character in a Star Trek film. I just think that they shouldn't do it to past characters that were sort of already imagined and created by the creator a certain way. I think it should be done with it, like bring in a new character. So that's kind of my initial feeling on it when I take a character like Lando. But again, I'll reserve full opinion on that until after I see the film.
The other thing with the Star Trek thing is that at least in the new ones, I understand that, you know, they were trying to give George Takei, you know, something, you know, kind of a nod at everything, you know, he had gone through and now being a prominent voice in that community. Mm-hmm. But I think the problem was the execution more so than the fact that they made the new Sulu.
Yeah.
I think the execution more so than the fact that they did it was the issue, because I don't want to say they beat it over the head, but they just wanted, they put it out there like, hey, we just want to make sure everybody knows.
Right.
Sulu is gay, as opposed to just, you know, whether it be leaving out there or just, you know, making it as happenstance, as opposed to kind of waving a flag in the air. Because there's a difference, you know, if you want to, because that's a way to take people out of it. And then also, you know, that's the other thing. If you want to make statements like that, or you want to introduce things, the easiest way to do it and not take people out of the film itself, but then also not give rise to too many trolls.
Yeah.
Is don't make it too obvious. Because when you make it too obvious, then for some reason the trolls come out from under the cave and they start, you know, terrorizing the internet and you ruined my childhood, all these sort of things. So,
and that could happen. I mean, that could happen with this Lando thing. It's too, I mean, it's, I don't know yet. We'll see. We'll wait and see. But I could see that being a target for the very audience that you're talking about. It could be really cool. I mean, it could be like this, kind of like Dennis Rodman of the sci-fi world. I always imagine Dennis Rodman as kind of being the closest thing to a pansexual in the NBA. In terms, you know, it kind of jokingly, people would make jokes about Dennis Rodman that he would sleep with, you know, anything that he could, you know, sleep with, whether it's a man, a woman, yeah, or a shark. So maybe kind of a little bit of a wild Lando.
Come on, handle, buddy, don't let me down.
That's balls to the wall.
And I mean, it, like I said, if it's done right, it doesn't contradict anything shown in, you know, the old movies. Because in the old movies, all we see is this guy is really suave. He knows how to talk. He's got a great smile and he's very enthusiastic. There's nothing in those films that specifically, like, Lando's like, oh, I love me some women. Mm-hmm. You know,
he doesn't ever say that. One of the things I think happens too, and is people associate Lando so much with Billy Dee Williams and vice versa. They think of the Billy Dee Williams what was the commercial he did? The beer commercial, Colt 45. They think of that Colt 45, suave, the ultimate ladies' man of the late 70s and early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You're after something. Is it revenge? Money? Or is it something else? You look good. A little rough around the edges, but good.
Heard about a job. Big shot gangster putting together crew.
I'm a driver, and I'm a flyer. I waited a long time for a shot like this.
What do you think? Well, what do you know?
I just want it to be fun, which is the majority of what I've heard is that's what it is. And, you know, they wouldn't have showed it at Cannes, and I don't think they would have premiered it 2 weeks before it came out if they weren't confident.
Yeah, that was a big sign that this is going to be okay.
Yeah, and it, you know, I just want, you know, a fun May blockbuster movie. I don't need it to blow me away to where, you know, I go home like staying up all night thinking about like, well, what if this or what if that? I want a good three-act story. And then, you know, like I said, I never cared to want a solo movie, but if they're going to spend the millions of dollars to give me one, the least I can do is go see it. And hopefully it takes me on a fun ride and, you know, gives me a little bit of, you know, the things that we've heard about in legends and through books and comics and things like that about the history of Solo and Lando and Chewie. But then now you're giving it to me visually. I mean, I'm going to eat it up and give it to me, and hopefully it's good.
Have you ever wanted, this is a random question, kind of aside from that, but related. Have you ever wanted subtitles for Chewbacca? Or do you think that would take away from his character?
I think it would take away. I mean, it would, that him and R2, I think part of the charm is the not knowing exactly what either of them say, but mm-hmm. then having, whether it be Luke or Han or Leia, whoever, conversing back with them is like part of the Star Wars humor. Mm-hmm. You know, people say like, oh, these new Star Wars movies don't have the Star Wars humor. But a lot of that is that R2 and the Chewbacca, the banter. And I think that, you know, Harrison Ford with Chewie in The Force Awakens was great. Some of their banter with, you know, about the bowcaster and things like that. And, you know, from what we've seen in the trailers where he's like, you know how to fly, 190 and like things like that. That's very like it's part of the fun.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Another thing that's part of the fun is some agree or disagree for those asses right after this. That ass.
Thunderpop, in association with D's Nuts Productions, got 'em.
Johnny Lightfoot on this 72nd episode. Are you ready for some agree or disagree, sir?
I am.
Let's do it. Diving in, number one. Based on some social media posts on the part of some of the people that work behind the scenes on the Universal's Dark Universe films, there has been speculation that the fledgling monster expanded universe might still be alive and well. Do you agree or disagree that Universal should push forward with their current version of the Dark Universe despite the failure of The Mummy?
I agree with the stipulation that they get somebody who knows their stuff. Like if they had Guillermo del Toro.
Yes, I was just thinking about that.
Spearheading a Universal Monsters universe, I would say, you know, shut up and take my money.
Yeah, no questions asked.
And I mean, I get it. The Mummy, they tried to do too much too soon. They went on the same path that DCEU did, but with less movies. So DCEU tried to do it in their fifth movie, and Monsters, you know, Universal Monsters tried to do it in their first movie. They just tried to do too much too soon. They didn't go down the direction that, you know, somebody like a Guillermo del Toro would go down, which is, let's go down that traditional.
Whoa. Okay. We lost Johnny on Skype. So I had to call him. We skip ahead now. We travel to the future about 5 minutes. And I've got Johnny back on the phone. We're just gonna finish this episode. I've got Johnny. He's on the speakerphone, and I've got it up against the mic now. Skype lost our Skype feed. Number two, on a recent episode of the Jedi Council, the Collider host, and I know you watch Jedi Council from time to time, the Collider host all discussed what they would have changed about Last Jedi. And it was Kristen Harloff that believes that J.J. Abrams will recon a great deal of what Rian Johnson's team came up with for Episode 8. Do you agree or disagree with that theory?
While I usually agree with a lot of what Kristen Harloff said, and I was actually talking to a buddy of mine about this, about whether J.J. would go back and retcon some of Rian Johnson's work, I don't think so, because Daisy Ridley even came out and said not that long ago that she knew from the beginning, from talks with JJ, that her parents were nobody. I mean, he might retcon some things, but I don't think, like, from an overall standpoint, I don't think he will, because all Rian really did was take the ideas they had floated around between him, JJ, and Lucasfilm, and JJ's always been about his mystery box with all of his projects. He likes having his little trips and his little mystery boxes, and I think Rian basically said, you know, I'm not playing the mystery box game, I'm opening up and dumping it all out. So I don't think he's really going to retcon much, if anything.
I'd be interested to see what they end up doing. Since I had one more question for you on agree disagree, but since we were having some issues, technical difficulties, I'm going to save that one because that's one that's just as fresh and interesting to ask you later as it will be now. It was Batman Joker related, so I'll save that. And we'll go straight into thoughts and advice for everyone's day, boys and girls. This is the thought and the advice.
I think for me now, my son is 4, so we're definitely approaching the time where you have to have the talk.
There's a lot of questions, I think, that once she starts talking, she'll probably throw at me.
He doesn't know much beyond what he's learned from me in terms of who the characters are.
They may not be understanding what they're being shown, but it's getting in there.
It's never too early to introduce your child to Star Wars.
I think probably the earliest you can get the kids involved in Star Wars, the better.
I explained to my son that the Force is a mysterious power that flows through all of us, that binds us all together. There is a light side and a dark side to the Force.
Sometimes the dark side looks kind of attractive. You have to discuss those issues around that. Annihilating planets, definitely not a good thing, but, you know, the Force can cause you to do all kinds of crazy things.
Yeah. There's a few very important things that I think he needs to realize growing up. One, it's that Han Solo shot first. I don't really want my son growing up in a world where we believe Greedo shot first.
A lot of kids in the playground like Jar Jar Binks. We're gonna keep her, Jar Jar Binks, free for as long as possible.
Binks hates puppies. Binks killed grandma. Whatever it takes to get this idea that Binks is cool out of my son's mind, I'm willing to do it. If it means dressing up as Binks and scaring him in the night, I will do that.
We do not watch the special editions of the original trilogy in this house.
We all know that when Anakin was electrocuted by the Emperor, he was an old guy, not that guy from Shattered Glass.
I know kids like to think that, you know, Anakin is this, you know, big hero, but we all know what happens to Anakin.
There's no question that you should start with A New Hope.
You have to start with the original 3 films and work your way back towards the newer ones, which is how it was intended to be.
I want her to have the same feeling that I did when she's watching Empire and it's revealed by Vader that he is Luke Skywalker's father.
The main thing is not to tell anybody who Luke Skywalker's father is, and the fact that Princess Leia is actually his sister. Because it gets pretty weird there when he has feelings for her.
Many other Star Wars aficionados have taken issue with my decision to tell my son that Darth Vader is in fact Luke's father. But until you've walked a mile in my shoes, unless you were there that day when he asked the question and he had the little book with the pictures and he wanted to know, I didn't know what else to tell him. So I told him Darth Vader's Luke's father. Does that make me a bad father? Probably.
He's not his father.
It wasn't like this when I was a kid. The movies were unveiling themselves to me in periods of like 3 or more years, one after the other. It wasn't this wealth of information just like smacking me in the face. My parents didn't have to deal with this.
All you can do is hope, really, with anything else. You just hope that they remember everything that they were taught and they use it. I didn't start early enough with this one. I wish I had.
And there you go. I want to thank Mr. Johnny Lightfoot for joining us for episode 72. And whether it's by phone, by computer, whether it's by tablet, by plane, by the Millennium Falcon, Johnny's going to be there. And we want to thank you, Johnny. And everyone have a good day, month, hour, second, millisecond. Peace. And may the Force be with you once again.
Okay, I lied.
And Thunder Pop was a Hit the Bricks production.
You see, how'd you guys let me beat you on that one? Come on. There's no liars in this game, just players.
The seat taken?
Nobody's in the seat that I ain't taken, friend.
So this is, Sabak?
Sabak.
Sabak. Got it.
You played before?
A couple times, yeah.
Captain Lando Calrissian.
Han Solo.
Looks like you're, having a good day.
I'm a lucky guy.
Can I ask you a question, Captain Calrissian?
Anything, Han?
It's Han, but... that's okay. I heard a story about you. I was wondering if it's true.
Everything you've heard about me is true.
All right, old buddy.